a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
What does that do to our... Senate Ag and Natural Resources will come to order. Secretary, call the roll.
Bradford.
Here.
Garnas.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Klocek.
Present.
Maher. Peterson.
Here.
Valley.
Here.
Howie.
Here.
Roden.
Here. Quorum's present. You have the minutes. Comments, additions, corrections, action.
Move approve.
Senator Howie moves to approve the minutes, seconded by Senator Klocek. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Just a couple announcements before we get started today. First, we have a couple pages here that are here to help us. Elizabeth Volsky from Eureka and Zach Bunn from Isabel. Thanks for your help. Just a couple announcements. If you wish to testify today, we'd ask you to sign up at the roster or the podium by the front door. Also, you might check your cell phones, make sure they're on an appropriate setting. We will take just two bills today and should be a relatively short day. Any other announcements or guests that anybody would like to introduce? Seeing none, we will move to our calendar, starting with House Bill 1127, an act to authorize landowners and lessees to possess certain game animals and game bird trophies. House Bill 1127 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Ag Committee. It's kind of fun to be over in the Senate, in the words of the author, Jacob Riis, to see how the other half lives. And we occasionally get to work together, but not enough, and so I'm glad to be here this morning. This bill is actually a short bill, and it grew out of a discussion last year by
Representative, could you state your name for the record, please?
Very sorry, Mr. Chairman. Oren Sorensen, District Representative 25. Thank you.
Thank you.
The origin of this bill goes back to last year when in House Ag Committee we were discussing the bill to increase the fines for trophy big game animal. And most of us in the House Ag Committee very much supported the bill. But a question came up as far as what if a farmer has found or a rancher has found this magnificent animal? Would they too be subject to those new larger fines? And I thank Game Fish and Parks for helping me go back through old testimony and clarify some things, but I'll just word it this way. There was much confusion as to the application of any new such law. So a number of people on that committee and I voted no. We wanted some clarification. We wanted clarification for that rancher, that landowner who might come across some magnificent animal unrealizing the penalty might hang it on a barn or hang it up in their garage. And there was a lot of confusion on that issue. So I brought the bill. In the original form, the bill said, for an act entitled, an act to authorize landowners and lessees to possess certain game animals and game bird trophies. And somebody asked, why did you put game bird on there? That happened on my property once where a white albino pheasant was found. And so it can happen also with birds. But this would be amended, or this chapter 4114 be amended by adding a new section to read as follows. If any landowner or lessee finds a skull, antler, or carcass of a game animal or game bird on the landowner's property or on property occupied by the lessee, and if the landowner or lessee within 5 days submits to the Game Fish and Parks an affidavit that the animal was not taken illegally, the person is vested with lawful possession of the skull, antler, or carcass. And then some members of the Game Fish and Parks so kindly informed me that there was a policy change since last year, and I believe it was Emmett Kieser who handed me some wording in a policy change, and he showed me what the new policy change was, and I liked it better than what my bill said. So as to hopefully win the support of Game, Fish, and Parks, I took the wording from their bill, which is right in front of you. And for those of you in the audience, it won't take me long, and on the Internet, the Secretary of Game, Fish, and Parks may provide a written authorization allowing a resident, landowner, or leasee to take possession of antlers, horns, and skulls of white-tailed deer, mule deer, or antelope found on the landowner's property or a game bird found on the property if a conservation officer, here's the clue, if the conservation officer has determined that there is no reasonable suspicion that the animal may have been killed illegally. The landowner or leasee may not take possession, though, of that deer or antelope parts or game bird unless a conservation officer has first, number one, examined the animal before it is moved from the location where it is initially found, two, conducted an investigation, and three, here's the part I like, subsequently made a determination as to the presence or lack of reasonable suspicion of the violation of state law or rule. Now, people said, Representative Sorensen, we need proof. We need absolute proof that this animal could not be taken illegally. I think here it is. The very last three lines. If evidence exists that the deer, antelope, or game bird was killed by a firearm or bow and arrow, no matter who took it, if that recent find was found killed by one of those weapons, and I don't know what else we could have added, maybe a knife, that's probably pretty unusual, or a spear, but in those circumstances, the officer shall consult with the officer's immediate supervisor, and only those two people will determine the appropriate disposition. The landowner has no say. In that circumstance, only the CO and his immediate supervisor will determine. And so I think that clears up any intent. We do not want to hide poachers. Another reason I brought this bill, one of my personal reasons, was a sort of a compromise. Some say this is a real small issue, and toward the end of a session when we're talking about money for schools and all the other things, why deal with an issue such as this? This is a huge little issue to a landowner. It deals with landowner rights. Some voted no. Because they said, well, even opening the door just a little bit, a good defense attorney could say, well, if we put this into law, my client meant to do this or meant to do that. I submit to you that that last paragraph takes care of that. Some have asked, would a person take a trophy animal, shoot it, leave it lay for a year, and then they could, Mr. Officer, here's what I found. Come and inspect it. Well, my answer to that is the rodents that we have, mice especially, love that protein. Those antlers are all 100% protein. They love that protein, and they love to eat that. I don't believe that somebody who's dealing with a $20,000 or $30,000 potential animal is going to leave it lay there for the mice and for other animals of prey. I think it's a safe bill. I've changed it to try to win the approval of Game, Fish, and Parks. I believe it's a small step to bring landowners and Game, Fish, and Parks together. And I reminded what a good friend of mine always says, good policy makes good law. In closing, is it wrong to let the farmer, the rancher, who feeds the deer, who occasionally runs over those antlers and pops a tire at a cost of $1,000 each, is it really wrong to give them this carcass and a small bit of landowner rights? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes my presentation, and I'll sure be around for any questions.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, we will open the mic to opponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of Ag and Natural Resources Committee. My name is Tony Life. I'm director of the Wildlife Division for the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. I appear before you this morning to voice department opposition to this hog-housed version of House Bill 1127. You know, although I believe that Representative Sorensen's goal with this bill is well-intended, it is the unintended consequences that cause concern. Passage of 1127 would establish a basis of statutory protection to anyone that chooses to violate game laws as long as they own fee title or lease any property in the state. You know, there are very few instances where officers actually observe poachers killing animals that they poach. Most commonly, it's through an investigation that we find out that a perpetrator shot the animal in violation of game laws. In these cases, we almost always get convictions of these crimes by proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the poacher was in illegal possession of that poached animal. Very important four words there, beyond a reasonable doubt. This is because, you know, the possession of that animal is the element of the investigation that we have the best chance of proving beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. Now, the burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, and this burden lies in the hands of the prosecuting attorney. And to get acquittals, all defense attorneys need to do is raise that reasonable doubt in the minds of judges or jurors. If enacted, this statute would create a foundation of establishing reasonable doubt. Again, I don't believe it's Representative Sorensen's goal, but it is the unintended consequences of passage of this bill. Let me take you back to last year. Last year, we had this exact same discussion in the same room. Following that discussion, I gave Senator Howey an assurance that I was going to go back to the department and address this issue, and I have. We drafted and implemented a common sense policy that allows landowners to possess wildlife parts that they find on their property. That policy is in front of you right now in the form of House Bill 1127. Last year was House Bill 1053. I went back and grabbed a copy of it and looked at the amendment that was placed on there by this committee and subsequently removed by Senator Howey on the Senate floor before that bill was debated and passed. I want to be clear here. I'm not overly concerned about landowners picking up dead deer parts or other parts. It's more a matter of what's the proper place for this language. We all agree landowners should be allowed latitude to pick up wildlife parts on their property. And we agree to the extent that we have drafted the policy to make that happen. It's common sense. Sometimes, as much as we'd like to, it's not possible to always legislate common sense. You have to apply some reasonableness to interpretation of laws and rules. I believe that if you let our policy work as it was intended, it will have the same impact as this legislation without the unintended consequences of putting statutory protections into place for those individuals that choose to violate game laws. I urge your defeat of House Bill 1127, and I will stand by for any questions that the committee might have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other opponents? Are there any other opponents? Seeing none, Representative Sorensen, would you like a brief rebuttal?
Very brief, thank you.
And I guess I would just answer this real quickly. As far as the unintended consequences, I believe this law allows Game, Fish, and Parks, if passed, to make the decision beyond a reasonable doubt. It's there. In-house debate, and we sure don't have any more intelligence necessarily than this body or this chamber, but a good point came up from a lawyer on the floor. And he voted for the bill because he said a good lawyer could already use policy as an argument to create doubt, thereby, in my mind, negating the fact that a law could be used to create reasonable doubt. Again, what makes good policy makes good law, and policy can be changed at any time. There's no real guarantees, and I think our landowners need just a little bit more of a guarantee. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Garnos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions for Mr. Leaf, please. Thank you, Mr. Leaf. A couple quick questions. Circumstances like this where antlers have been found on a landowner's, how many times has that occurred where they've
actually... Senator Garnos, do you have a microphone?
Yeah, I'll speak into it. I just want to know the number of occurrences where it's happened where a landowner has found some type of antlers on their land and been prosecuted. Is that a very big number? Does that ever happen?
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, Senator Garnos, that has never happened, to the best of my knowledge. And I've been around the agency for a number of years. I've only been in the director's position for the last three, but I'm not aware of a situation where any landowner has ever been prosecuted for picking up wildlife parks.
Mr. Chairman, this one general question. A wild animal, whether it's a bird or a deer, who distinctly owns that? Is it the state of South Dakota? Is it the landowner? Just for some clarification.
Mr. Chairman, state statute says that all wild animals of this state are the property of the citizens of this state and are entrusted to the state for management. That responsibility falls to the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks.
And then one quick follow-up. How about a dead animal that's found in a home, like a landowner's land? Antlers, for example. Once the animal is dead, who owns that?
Mr. Chairman, possession of that property remains with the state of South Dakota. The only way that individual citizens can take personal possession of wildlife is through hunting seasons or through established processes by which that animal is transferred from public to personal possession.
Thank you.
Further questions? Any other questions from the committee? Senator Valley.
Could you explain how a poacher could use this, whether it's either in law or policy, how that would work so that I and maybe the committee would, just so we can see how someone would play the game?
Mr. Chairman, good question, Senator Valley. I'll try to give you a little idea of what I'm talking about. Like I mentioned, most of the times when we get poaching cases that are prosecuted, it's done through an investigation. We get a tip. Somebody calls us or somebody else or calls our tips hotline. And then we go out and investigate. If it's a situation where we were to find a honestly poached animal, again, we're not talking about this situation where a landowner picked up some parts and have it in their possession, actually got a deer hanging in the barn with no tag on it. That is the place where, we've got a pretty firm case that the individual had no license, nobody in the household had a license, we're able to bring charges against that individual. And if this bill were in statute, it would be a place where a foundation, where a defense attorney could start arguing this reasonable doubt. Well, my client found this deer on his property, Your Honor. I know the statute says he was supposed to call Game, Fish, and Parks. He didn't know that. He thought he was entitled to pick up this animal, bring it back to his barn, and he was going to call. In fact, he did call. He called the Sioux Falls office, and nobody answered. He got an answering machine. So he tried to make contact. It was all in he didn't want this thing to go to waste, and just wanted to be bring it home and take care of this animal that he just found out on his property. That's the basis of the argument that we're concerned about by putting in statute. Now, the difference between having it in policy is in statute. That in statute is that in a court of law, statutes are the basis of the decisions of a court. The statute says he's entitled to possess this particular individual or this particular animal, and that is the foundation at which the defense attorney then can argue this reasonable doubt.
For Senator Valley.
Would he be able to do the same if it was policy?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe that they have the same foundation to make that same argument because the force of law is much different than a policy that the department has.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll open to comments and interactions. Senator Garnos.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a due pass motion, then I have a comment.
Motion by Garnos. Is there a second? Second by Senator Maher. Comments on the do-pass motion, Senator Garnos?
I'll make three quick points here. Number one, when we talk about policy changing to statute, we have policies, we have administrative rules, we have statute, and we have the Constitution. I mean, this would put it into statute, which obviously makes it more rock solid. And I would make the argument that a good lawyer, whether it be a defendant or a plaintiff, he could argue this and use this either way. So I'd say the plaintiff, this would give them more power and their attorney more power. That would be number one. I think it puts safeguards in place, and a good attorney would exploit that. Number two, I think this obviously would carry more weight. It's not a policy. We look around. I look around the committee here. Most of us are landowners. Representative Valley, if he's not a landowner, he has enough money to buy a lot of land. So my last argument would play into that. It is, to me, a landowner rights issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further comments on the do-pass motion? Senator Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I make a substitute motion.
State your motion.
To defer this to the 41st day.
Second.
Substitute motion by Senator Hansen, second by Senator Howey. Comments on the substitute motion to defer, Senator Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that, there is a lot of... Let me back up. We sometimes are complimented when we remove laws from the books, and maybe we should follow that same philosophy in being just a little bit cautious in putting new things onto the books where we already have a policy that probably is, in its infancy, and we've had several other situations where we say let's continue to see how the policy works, and if there's some fine tuning that needs to be made as we go along, maybe someday we will choose to develop a statute, but we're probably premature at this time.
Further comments, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask you to resist the motion to the 41st day. The steps that the landowner has to take are clear in this bill. The conservation officer has to be involved. It's got to be okayed by he and his superior. I think it's good to have this in statute because a policy is subject to change at any moment depending on who's making the policy. Here, our intent to protect the landowner's rights is in statute, and would hope that you can support the bill.
Further comments on the substitute motion to defer, Senator Howey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief, but I just want to say that, first, I appreciate the GF&P working on this and developing a policy, but I think policy itself is still not where I'd like to see it be, and I'd hate to see it put in statute. I think a better policy would be if at the middle of line 10, after it says, after this conservation officer has determined there's no reasonable suspicion that the animal may have been killed illegally. At that point, I think that everything from there on practically could be eliminated. And here we're saying now we want to put these other steps into law. And I think the policy, frankly, is still has the potential to be a little cumbersome and put the landowner in a position where they almost have to prove their innocence. So I don't really like the policy yet. I like the direction it's going, but I think it'd be a serious mistake for us to put this policy into law when I'm not sure I even embrace the policy just yet.
Further comments, Senator Valley?
Well, I want to set the record straight from Senator Garnes. I don't have money, but I do have some land, so... and I guess this is a new policy, and it's in an area where, as Senator Howey just commented, that he's not sure this is quite there yet. So I would encourage sending this to the 41st day. Let's see how the policy works. And maybe it needs to be adjusted, and maybe at some point it could be made law. But at this point, we haven't seen if the policy is going to work, and it does essentially the same thing as a law. So I'd encourage you to send this to the 41st day, and I would ask that the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks come to us if they want to delete this policy and tell us about why they want to do it. Otherwise, I will assume that the policy will still be there. Sometimes we don't know when policy changes are being made, but I would suggest that the Game Fish and Parks tell us if this policy isn't working and why in the future if you decide to change it. And with that, I'd encourage you to send it to the 41st day.
Further comments, Senator Bradford.
Well, first of all, in my case, on our land and on the reservation, we have total rights to kill anytime we need for consumption. So we really have no trophy animals. I don't have to worry about trophy animals on our place because we eat those deer when they're at a time for food. We don't have this problem. But I still think that this is something that kind of we're stepping on landowners. And I think really and truly sometimes a statute's needed. I mean, because otherwise, I still feel that many times we've had problems that a policy can be more manipulated than a statute. And so I urge you to resist the 41st day.
Further comments? Any other comments? Well, before we take a vote, I'd like to add my comments and echo those of Senator Howey, because I think that Senator Howey hit the nail on the head. It's troublesome to me to establish in policy. Policy is one thing. It's a guidelines for the department. They're not mandated by that policy as by the force of law. And I think Howey is spot on when he says that the language starting in the middle of line 10, I find that somewhat objectionable, because now we're going to establish a policy in law that I don't know that is that sound a practice. We will establish in law that they have to that animal has to be examined prior to the time that the possession's taken. Well, I have a 11-year-old that's running around the Capitol. It's probably end up in jail because he finds a skull and he drags it to the house. And it's not been a big deal, and I don't think it would be a big deal with the GF&P currently, because they can apply common sense and logic and temper their actions through their policy. I don't know that that's the case if we establish it in law. So I think that the language might actually take us in the wrong direction by establishing this particular language, especially on page 2 in the bottom of the first page in law. So I will be supporting the motion to defer to the 41st day. With that, if there are no other comments, the secretary would call the roll. And the motion again is to defer, the substitute motion to defer House Bill 1127 to the 41st legislative day.
Bradford?
No.
Garnas?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Klocek?
No.
Maher?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Valley?
Aye.
Howey?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, 4 ayes, 5 nays.
Motion fails. House, that will take us back to the original motion. Do pass House Bill 1127. Further comments on the do pass motion? Senator Howey.
Mr. Chairman, would it be appropriate to move an amendment at this time?
You can make a substitute motion to amend.
I'd like to make a substitute motion to amend to delete everything after the word illegally on line 10.
Motion, substitute motion to amend House Bill 1127 by deleting, starting on line 10, page 1, everything after illegally, period, and all of page 2, correct?
Yes.
Is there a second? Well, the chair will second the motion. Substitute motion to amend. Comments on that motion, Senator Howey?
No comment.
Senator Darnos.
I'd ask the committee to not pass the amendment because I do believe that it's important, the three sub-areas that actually have the conservation officer, the landowner, and or leasee verification. I think that's important. Thank you.
Further comments on the substitute motion to amend? Seeing none, Secretary will call the roll.
Bradford?
No.
Garnas?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Klocek?
No.
Maher?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Valley?
No.
Howie?
Yes.
Roden?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, 3 ayes, 7 nays.
Motion fails. House Bill 1127 goes, we go back to our original. The substitute motion to amend fails, which takes us again back to the original motion do pass. Comments on that motion, Senator Valley.
Just a question on the last motion. Did you say it went down 7-3?
No, 6-3.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me, 6-3.
Okay, further comments on the original motion do pass.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Howie.
I'd just like to ask the committee to reconsider their votes on the passage of this bill. I think it is fair to say that at best this policy needs some work. And for us to take a policy, a new policy, that hasn't really had an opportunity to be tested and tried and make it law just transcends reason. I hope that you'll reconsider your vote and vote against passing this legislation.
Further comments? Seeing none, motion then is due pass. House Bill 1127. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Bradford?
Aye.
Garnas?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Klocek?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Valley?
No.
Howie?
No.
Roden?
No.
Mr. Chair, 5 ayes. That's all right.
And 5-4.
5-4, yeah. 4 nays.
Motion carries. House Bill 1127 goes to the floor. Do pass. We will move now to House Bill 1260, an act to revise the definition of federal law enforcement officers to include certain United States Forest Service personnel. House Bill 1260 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Lance Russell, State Representative, District 30. What House Bill 1260 does, well, first of all, I'll tell how this got to us. Senator Howie had been contacted by federal law enforcement from the United States Forest Service, and essentially they were asking to be added under our definition in state law of what a federal law enforcement officer is. Now, these are federally certified law enforcement officers, so they don't go through our system here in the state to become state certified simultaneously, because we've got a program here at the Department of Criminal Investigation for our state law enforcement, but these folks go to a special federal training center. And as you can look at the statute, there are a number of federal agencies, including the Internal Revenue Service, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, the U.S. Wildlife Service, the Federal Protective Service, Immigrations and Naturalization, and the National Park Service, but currently our statute omits those people who work for the United States Forest Service as law enforcement officers. Now, why this is important is because in a number of matters, and as many of you know, I was the state's attorney for Fall River and Shannon County for 8 years. And in that role, we had a number of prosecutions where we had assistance from, because the Black Hills National Forest and the Buffalo Gap National Grasslands contains more than 250,000 acres in Fall River County alone. And so a number of incidents, you might say. We utilize the assistance of the National Forest Service folks as law enforcement officers. And in one particular matter, shortly after the fire that occurred in and around Hot Springs, where one of our members of our community was killed, and there was an enormous fire south of town. Within 10 to 15 days, there was another fire deliberately started on Battle Mountain. And federal law enforcement, with the National Park Service right out of, or not with the National Park Service, but with the Forest Service right there in Hot Springs, they have a fire investigator. And he was one of the first people on the scene. And he did the entire fire investigation for me, and then we took it before a grand jury and indicted this individual for the fire that he had started. He had, in fact, started. When we've had jailbreaks, from the Hot Springs jail. When you have a jailbreak, everybody gets in the middle of it. Even though the Fall River County Sheriff is the one who is responsible for that and to apprehend those individuals, Game Fish and Parks jumps in, and as many of you know, they have very limited, by statute, law enforcement authority. For instance, they can't make a driving under the influence arrest within Fall River County, even though they come across it. They don't have that authority. So what they have to do is they have to call in South Dakota Highway Patrol or somebody of that nature. What this does, and the statute was amended, and I will go to the statute here in the pocket part. This statute was amended in 2005, 2006, and 2008 in a piecemeal fashion, adding different federal agencies. And the purpose for it is liability. If they are assisting state law enforcement in one of these chases or something of that nature, they should be defined under our code, under our state code, as being a federal law enforcement officer, because that's in fact what they are. So this is simply something to include them so that they have the rights of an immigration and naturalization or a U.S. Park Service law enforcement officer. It's simply, I think, nothing more than a cleanup. And unfortunately, the federal government and the legislature, we've done it on a piecemeal approach, and we haven't got everybody included, and this is just including these folks. Now, from the standpoint of how many law enforcement officers they have in the state, they have four. And currently, they only have two, but they have four FTEs in the entire state of South Dakota, and they manage more than 2 million acres, because they come all the way out here to do investigations on the Fort Pierre National Grasslands. I don't know if it's called that. But just south of town here, there's a national grasslands, and they have to come all the way from Rapid City to do the investigations. But if they're traveling through the state and other law enforcement needs assistance as they're coming across the state and it's not on federal land, and they're asked for assistance from local law enforcement, this would simply give them the protections afforded to any other federal law enforcement officer in the state. So I would ask that the committee go ahead and support this, and I will answer any questions that you have. I have one additional person to testify, and I thank you for your time and your attention to this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Nancy Martinez, and I'm the patrol captain for the northern zone of Region 2, and I'm based out of Custer, South Dakota. And I just wanted to come here today and let you know that granting Forest Service officers peace officer status in South Dakota would allow us to combine our resources with state and local law enforcement agencies during the times of short staffing and reduced budgets. It would allow for a more efficient and consistent law enforcement with the national forests, resulting in improved public safety for citizens of South Dakota and those that visit this great state. Forest Service officers would still continue to confine their enforcement efforts within the boundaries of the U.S. Forest Service lands per our rules and regulations. However, the ability to assist the county and state agencies within these large remote areas would vastly be improved. The public usually doesn't differentiate between the Forest Service officers, conservation officers, or deputies, county deputies. We all look the same to them. It's not uncommon for people to report crimes to us that may not be regulated by our criminal statutes. These crimes may actually be in progress or have occurred very recently. Our ability to keep the peace and to protect the victims of these crimes for county and state officers until assistance arrives is critical. This is especially true in instances of domestic abuse, assault, DUI, or other issues of public safety. We routinely patrol very remote and sparsely populated parts of the states where there is limited state, local, or county law enforcement presence. So I just urge you to pass this and allow us to have state peace officer status. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy, I should remind you, and we're not going to make a big deal of it, but you're representing the U.S. Forest Service. You should be a registered lobbyist, so I'd ask that as you, sometime today that you stop at the Secretary of State's office and register as a lobbyist for,
okay,
for your organization.
Okay.
Thank you. Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Seeing none, we'll waive rebuttal and move right to questions from the committee. Senator Howley.
I'm just curious, since they, until we pass this, really are not included as law enforcement personnel, we'll have to have someone else arrest her for not having her lobbyist badge. Then am I right on that?
And since she's the only one in here that's carrying a gun, I think I'll get somebody else to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to pass.
Well, actually, we're in question.
Okay.
We're taking questions right now. Senator Bradford.
And could I say, can we please do pass?
Senator Bradford.
First of all, why? I assumed any federal officer, any federal could. Why do we have to put in statute for federal officers to be able to?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bradford, the main reason is the interplay of our statute as it relates to 23A3-24 and 23A325. And in that, 25, which is outside of the scope of the bill, there's a statutory scheme here, and essentially one of the prongs of 23A-3-25 is the officer is rendering assistance to a state or local officer in an emergency or request, and it gives that person certain protections that they don't currently have. And the dichotomy with the Indian reservation were, I mean, I don't even know if the BIA is listed in here.
No, they aren't. That's why.
But the dichotomy with the BIA law enforcement that you would be more interested in is that the BIA within the confines of the Indian reservation, they have certain authorities by federal, you know, they have certain federal authorities that we have no jurisdiction there as the state. So that it's a little bit different because the feds can operate as they wish on the Indian reservation. However, the state cannot. But as it relates to like Fall River County, where you have a number of deeded acres, but you also have a lot of federal. You have over 250,000 acres of federal land. So essentially, if they're off the federal land and they're assisting state law enforcement, they're currently not protected any more than a regular individual. And a regular individual, you or I, we can make a citizen's arrest. There's a citizen's arrest statute in South Dakota, and that's what happens when the BIA picks me up on the Indian Reservation for DWI or something like that. If they do that on the Indian Reservation, they have authority under our citizen arrest statute, the tribal officers. But as it relates to in the state, they just simply need this so that they have a little more, a little broader latitude than under the citizen's arrest statute, which provides them more more protection against being sued if something goes wrong. For instance, if they're in the middle of some kind of a chase and somebody gets harmed, they're chasing down someone who might have escaped, or they're helping with state law enforcement to get somebody. If something goes wrong and somebody is, some third party is harmed, then they don't have the same protections that they would as if they're added here as in the defined as federal law enforcement. So it's really just a cleanup to assist them in terms of having some protection under our statute.
Senator Howey, or Senator Bradford.
I moved up in the world.
Well, that's
just
debatable.
A follow-up. in the case, then, you know, what I'm worried about here is that, and you know as well as I do, that some people who are considered federal officers, for us people, are really not very well trained or very, and that part of this worries me, because in the U.S. Forest Service, there's a lot of guys that all they do is cut down trees and work in those areas, but all of a sudden we're going to make them a cop, and I kind of question. So I wondered, do you have any idea how well trained these people are?
Mr. Chairman, essentially what you have is you have four individuals, four FTE in the entire state that are National Forest Service law enforcement officers. And these people are professional law enforcement. They're not trained at the same academy that tribal officers are trained at. I know what you're talking about as it relates to tribal officers. They're trained at the Law Enforcement Training Academy in Artesia, New Mexico, or something. These law enforcement officers are also trained. They are professional people. Their duty is law enforcement. This isn't some split role where they have some other administrative duties. These folks are law enforcement officers, and that's their full-time job.
Well, just one more follow-up.
Senator Bradford.
Look at it. It doesn't say officer. It says Forest Service. And to me, that's pretty broad. You could have Joe Doe in the Forest Service cutting down trees, and he could all of a sudden become an officer.
I think because it raised a question with me on line six where it says any officer or employees, and I,
let me clarify if I might,
please,
Mr.
Do.
Chairman. And as you read down further in the bill. And I'm reading, actually, let me get the bill so that I'm, I was reading out of the code, but just a second here. But as you read the bill, up at the top it says, for purposes of this chapter, federal law enforcement means any officer or employee of the federal, of any of those entities. And then at the end, on line 11, after National Park Service, it says, who is responsible for the prevention or detection of crimes or for the enforcement of the United States Code, and who is authorized to arrest with or without a warrant any person for a violation of the United States Code. So that's where the clarification comes, that these are law enforcement officers. These aren't just somebody else working for the federal government that isn't specifically trained and sanctioned under the United States Code to make arrest for violations of the United States Code.
Thank you. That's a good clarification. Further questions? Senator Valley?
So, see if my summation here is correct. We're saying if they are allowed to arrest people under federal code, that we're going to give them that same type of authority under state code, and according to the for the purpose of 23A-3-25, is that a general concept of where we're going? And if not, kind of help me get there, because what we are saying, it's law enforcement that they can do these things under federal code, and are we then giving that so that they can work with state code? And do they get any training in do any of these folks get any training in state code?
As it relates to, they do have, by putting them in the definition, they do have certain powers under 23A-325 that are a little bit broader than the citizen arrest statute. However, they don't have the full authority of state law enforcement. For instance, they can't arrest on a state misdemeanor. They can arrest on a felony. They have to have some... It actually says the officer has reasonable grounds to believe that a state felony has been committed and that the person arrested committed such felony, or the officer is rendering assistance to state or local law enforcement. So that's what's going on, is they're not going to have the full panoply of arrest rights that state and local law enforcement do. But if you've got somebody that's a felon, that they have reasonable grounds to believe is a felon, they can make an arrest under the state. It would be a state felony.
Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I listen to the testimony on this bill, I think that the bill is quite explicit in what it allows them to do, and I support the bill. But have some question of why this didn't go through judiciary.
Well, I could answer that question. I think judiciary has a bigger schedule than we do. That's probably why.
Mr. Chairman, this is what happened in the House, too. It went to Ag and Natural Resources. So,
any other questions? Senator Hansen.
I believe that probably indicates that there's more confidence in the ability of the Ag Natural Resources Committee than there is in the judiciary.
Senator Valley.
I'm on judiciary, so I take umbrage to that remark, and I'm going to have to vote on it either way. Thank you.
You're out of order. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, we will open to committee discussion and or action. I believe, Senator Howard, you are ready to make a motion.
Please enter that motion.
Motion by Senator Howie do pass on House Bill 1260. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Hansen. Comments on the motion?
No.
Any comments? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass on House Bill 1260. All those in favor, vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Bradford. Garnas.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Klocek.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Howie.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Vote. Motion carries. House Bill 1260 goes to the floor. Do pass. Did I hear no? Okay. House Bill 1260 will go to the floor. Do pass. Well, if there are no other announcements, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Valley, second by Garnos. Comments on that motion? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.